There we go.
We're just too anxious.
So I don't know where we want to begin today, but we have plenty to talk about, I know. Did everyone get the notes and things from last time?
Yes.
Yes, the ones that you posted?
Yeah, I just figured instead of sending them via email and on the Google site, I'd just do it one way and hope everyone got a chance to check it. So I apologize for them being late. But.
Great idea.
Got your comments on the sample question and so forth, and I thought they were very, very useful, and it's a good step forward, and it just points out the challenge of trying to concepts clearly, cleanly, but some of the questions do a decent job.
Right.
Yeah, thanks, Tisha, and I apologize because I said I was going to get in there and do my comments too, and I didn't.
Well, I didn't until this week. I had intended to do it much earlier too, but as I already said, January snuck up on us.
Well, can I ask a question? This is Barb.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
That'd be great.
Okay. And this is along the lines of the overlap across the four different areas. I was wondering if you guys as a group, have tried to identify what it is that would constitute an understanding of, say, sampling or an understanding of sampling distribution. And what I'm thinking about is, you know, just a list of students would be able to do this or do that or however you want to go about it, and that might allow you to identify what aspects are not overlapping and what aspects are overlapping?
Yeah, that had crossed my mind. I'm sorry, did anyone else want to go?
Okay. Okay.
When I was reading your chapter 13, I'll just call it that.
Okay.
Yours and then Beth Chance and Joan Garfield's article.
Mm-hmm.
And in your table that listed the prerequisite knowledge, those four domains, you have a little paragraph after each one that addresses some things. And it had been a long time since I had looked at it, and I think that table is what pushed me to think about what our questions were really addressing, too. And so I don't know if that's a useful place to start in terms of having this discussion. It's on page 300 if anyone has that chapter 13 in front of them.
I do have it here somewhere.
We may have talked about this a long time ago, but I know it had been a while since I looked at it.
Yeah, chapter 13 was a couple months back, I think, in my reading. All right, here's chapter 12, chapter 13. Okay.
I'm not as well organized. Maybe I can find it.
You're talking about the table of prerequisite knowledge?
Right.
Tisha?
And so idea of variability. What is a variable? What does it mean to say observations vary? And so students need an understanding of the spread of a distribution in contrast to common misconceptions of smoothness or variety.
I'm sorry, I'm also behind. What page is it on in chapter 13? I just got chapter 13 up.
300.
Great, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, this is where we based our initial list off of, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only thing that we've added, I think, to this is in the fourth bullet point, the idea of sampling. The first sentence about includes random samples about how they're representative of the population. I thought in some of our other conversations, we were trying to get a little bit more into that idea, a little bit more than just what is a random sample, but the idea of taking lots and lots and lots of different random samples, or is that just part of sampling distributions, the idea of taking lots and lots and lots of different ones? I felt like we wanted to go a little bit deeper in the idea of sampling than what this list says, but I might not be right here. I know the third sentence includes that. Never mind. Well, I have a question for you. I know this is slightly different than what we were just talking about, but I just want to throw it out because I was thinking about it in class yesterday. I've just started teaching the second semester statistics class again at my school. And in the first semester class, they do descriptive statistics, sampling distributions, and confidence intervals. And then I pick it up with hypothesis testing and then do regression another and move on from there. And when we get is trying to review what they did the first semester, the idea of sampling distribution was definitely the one that they were the least clear about and the one that they felt was the least useful because that was where the theory was. But when it comes down to practice, you just need to know which case you're in and so which distribution you have to use for the confidence interval and likewise for the hypothesis test. And I got that impression even with some of the students at the end of my last course in the second semester was that they actually seemed to be able to have a decent idea of what p-values were telling you about hypothesis tests without being able to explain really, really well what a sampling distribution is. Does that seem possible to you all? Or does that seem like a total contradiction?
No, I think that's quite possible. I think these things don't come as a whole always. You know, I think there's successive approximations to a good understanding that not just suddenly one has insight and it all is crystal clear, but that one gets a kind of a sense of it and then it slips away and you come back again. And it's, you know, so that having understanding of some parts can be helpful, but it necessarily precludes someone. If you don't have all the pieces perfectly in place, you still start making progress on the bigger concept.
Because I was just getting a little bit frustrated because I feel like if I spend trying to think of what we're looking into also in terms of trying to teach, and I was feeling a little frustration feeling like, geez, you know, we're spending all this time trying to really get the idea of sampling distribution really well understood, but the time that it takes to get that really, really well understood means that a lot of the application type topics you never get to. And maybe it's also because I teach business students, but when they get to the application type topics, that's where they tend to start to get really interested and eventually gain a better understanding of what a lot of this means. So I'm just feeling a little bit of frustration about wanting them to understand sampling distributions well, then to play off with wanting to be able to get to more interesting topics that will stimulate them to want to do more statistics.
Maybe coming at it in a kind of a circle. Coming back, closing the circle where one starts maybe with an interesting problem and then running into the question of, well, why would we need to be concerned about sampling distributions, develop some of the theory, and then come back to the practical problem again, but necessarily do it in just a linear sequence.
Yeah, there was so I just came back yesterday from the joint math meetings in San Diego, and there was a talk there from a physicist about how to bring the teachings of physics education into math education. And one of the things he said that's been very successful for them is having some kind of inquiry-based framing question up front to start off with. You know, so Michelle, in your context, give them the example to start with, even though they don't have the tools to solve it yet, and let them develop the motivation to learn the method so that they can solve the problem that they're faced with.
Yeah, I think that addresses one of the biggest problems or criticisms people have of the way statistics usually is taught, and that is it doesn't apply to anything. It doesn't make sense. It's not interesting from life and so forth. And starting with an example, even if they're not able to solve it, is if they can see they can develop the tools to extend their ability to complicated questions. But where does
thank
that
you. Thank you. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get, you know, I just was feeling this frustration about sampling distribution, so I just wanted to get it off my chest.
Well, I was wondering, Michelle, so I'm not sure I'm clear on your question. Although it sounds like you think that Dale and Michael kind of addressed it. It sounds like they did, but is your question is along the lines of do you need to teach about sampling distributions?
No. I don't doubt that I need to teach about it.
Well,
but I feel like with a lot of the readings and things that we're doing here, and I get lots of good ideas of things to do, but so much of the focus of what we're looking at right now is just trying to get what do they need to know to understand the sampling distributions, and what I guess I'm looking at is how much of sampling distributions is really, 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 really essential for them to get a pretty good idea of how statistics works, even if they don't have a great level of understanding of sampling distributions. Does that really impede them from being able to move on and have some sort of understanding of hypothesis testing and inference? I guess that's my question.
So I think I'm hearing your question again the way I heard it the first time. And so one thing is, how do you get them oriented so they have some interest in sampling distributions? And kind of an orientation is, well, it's a means to solving this problem, this question we might have. I guess my other thought was, why would I want them to learn and understand sampling distributions? Well, it's because I'd want them to use that knowledge to understand p-values and confidence intervals so that they could do the inferential stuff. And maybe so they could also have a general understanding that would let them go to other statistical procedures or methods, kind of generalize to them the idea of p-value and confidence interval, not just make it specific to whatever's covered in the course. But anyways, the idea that sampling distributions is another means to understanding something else that's important, p-values, confidence intervals, for example. And by way of saying that is, say, so what is important about what is an important understanding of sampling distributions to support a good understanding of p-values and confidence intervals so they can use it to do inference?
Yeah, that's you phrased my question much better than I did.
Well, I don't know about that, but that's getting at kind
of the gist. I guess that's what I'm getting at, which kind of gets back to where we had kind of started, I guess, way back in May. Was it started sort of with an interest in that, and then said, well, to understand this, we really need to understand sampling distributions, and so what do we need to know to understand sampling distributions? And I think I was just, this question was just coming, was prompted by the fact that I've been teaching mostly second semester statistics recently, and not as many first semester, so I'm looking more at that inference part, and seeing that some of my students actually have a decent idea of how inference works, even though they don't seem to be entirely clear on exactly how sampling distributions work. So that was all.
I'm going to throw one more thing out here and then try to hush for a little bit. And that is, I think I've been, I don't know, guilty, but in the past of just really being interested in how much can we get students to understand about sampling distributions, kind of like a end in and of itself. And I'm thinking, you know, like say from your second course perspective, Maybe I don't know if it's more legitimate or better, but it's certainly warranted to say, here's where I want them to get to, or here's where I want them to be in this second course. So what is it, again, about sampling distributions that needs to be developed in order so they can move on? And that's maybe not every little nuance of understanding that could be developed.
Yes. Okay, well, I apologize because I got us off on a different track, and Tisha had us looking at some of the ideas way back when, so I'm sorry for that.
No, I think it relates to what we're looking at with our project anyway, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can reaffirm, though, the importance of understanding of the sampling distribution and understanding kind of the, at a conceptual level, in terms of laying a good foundation for being able to generalize to just a wide range of statistical inferential procedures, that unless they have that understanding, it just becomes a sequence of medical steps. And that understanding, I think, is... But back to the question of how does one develop that, and that we're developing it strictly for its own... because it is so... by itself. It's got to be connected to the applications.
Yeah, I hear your voice kind of comes and goes a little bit. Does anybody else hear that when Gail speaks, or is it just me?
I hear it too.
Uh-oh. Maybe I'll try to get closer to the speak a little louder. Does that
work?
Perfect.
Yep, that, and now I can hear everything. Thank you.
Okay.
So Tisha, on page 300,
yeah,
when we were looking at the prerequisite knowledge,
mm-hmm.
And you said there was a paragraph afterwards that I think that you wanted us to look at.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just meant after each idea. So it says the idea of variability, and then there's a small paragraph explaining, I think, some things that they would look at in terms of what it means to have a grasp of variability. And so maybe if we're talking about separating things, when I went through and looked at our questions on sampling and then sampling distributions, there were a lot of them that were the same, just like we had when we looked at variability versus distributional thinking. And when I went back to this table at the bottom of page 300, when you look under the idea of sampling, and it says students should have begun to consider how sample statistics vary from sample to sample, but follow a predictable pattern. So maybe, I don't know if you all have those comments that I put together yesterday, I guess it's mm-hmm. page 12. I have a few new questions on the idea of sampling. This is something I saw at US COTS, and you probably all saw it too, but Shaughnessy had used this question on, you have a big container with 1,000 candies, 650 are red, 350 are yellow. Just asking the students to predict what they might see if six different students take samples. Maybe something like that would fit with this idea of sampling. And then all the other questions we looked at, let me find one. I'm not as organized as I should be either. Some that we had in our original list where we talk about Shelley flipping a coin 50 times and Diane flipping it 10 times. Who is more likely to get 20% or fewer? Maybe that's something that fits more with sampling distributions. I'm not sure. That's where it's really fuzzy for me, is what exactly would it mean even to say students should begin to consider how sample statistics vary from sample to sample? Am I making any sense at all?
No, you are. It is, I think, kind of an intrinsic connection between sampling and distribution. To understand your sample, you've got to look at a distribution. So this question that you added from Shauna, I think, is really good at getting at people's understanding what samples ought to look like, what you might have, that you don't always get the same result. That variability in sampling is just an intrinsic part of sampling.
Do you think that when we get to that idea, though, of the probability of finding, say, a proportion at least as extreme, does that cross over into sampling distributions from the idea of sampling?
Yeah. Well, it's a great transition to it. In a sense, one's generating the sampling distribution case where you're looking at what each of the individual students are.
What was that, Dale? I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I think you're right. But in some sense, it's leading into the sampling distribution. At this point, we're not really talking about how one might use the sampling distribution and so forth, but it is showing how it is generated by a series of samples. You know, you draw samples, and here we have 50 students drawing samples. And when we see what, you know, so we're getting a sense of what these samples might look like. Yeah, maybe this is a step beyond just sampling, though, because we're not,
Mike,
on your question, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that Mike Shaughnessy and Chris Redding have written a couple things together, and Mike, I think by himself, anyways, they've really looked at, They've got a lot of neat questions that look at students' sense of sampling variability, where it isn't asking just what do you think the summary statistics going to be across all the different samples, but what's a reasonable, if you had three samples from this population, would they all look identical? Would one sample have the same value repeated? If the sample size 10, would it have 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, et cetera? They have neat response options that get at different things, like are the students sensitive to how much variability there really could be? Do they seem to indicate that they think certain types of things are more or less likely than other types of outcomes? And really getting at variability across samples, which I think is part of, but not exactly the same thing as the distribution of a sample statistic.
Okay.
So anyways, I would encourage you to look at the Shaughnessy type items, Shaughnessy and Redding type items a bit to see if there might be some more examples there of interest.
Redding is spelled like reading, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Looks like Chris Reading.
Now, another important and related concept here is the notion of randomness. That is, to make the distinction between having a, well, in some sense, a representative sample, where you just say, when students, I think, have a confusion between what random means from a statistical perspective versus from a common everyday usage. You know, random means kind of haphazard, but to have an understanding of what a true random sample is might to deal with, too.
Yeah, and the idea, actually, that's something that I think oftentimes doesn't get stressed enough in introductory courses, is that we talk a lot about when you have a random sample, such and such, but often there's not a whole lot on sampling in those introductory courses. And when I talk about margin of error lots of times, the first thing when I ask students, you know, well, what do you think would affect the margin of error? Lots of times they say, well, if you didn't take a good sample. So the idea is that they're definitely thinking in terms of the idea is that of how do you get a good sample. So I think we could definitely devote more to how do you get a good sample, what does it mean to have a good sample, rather than too often just assuming, oh, we've taken all possible random samples or we have a nice random sample. I think you're right that idea of a good random sample could be stressed more.
Yeah, and the recognition that a random sample may in fact not be all that representative. Not everyone will be representative. And it leads into the importance of larger samples and so forth too, especially with funny distributions.
I like actually quality control examples to show that using some quality control charts, and just the idea that are you going to shut everything down just because one time you're out of your limits, or are you going to wait until you're out of your limits a lot of times? Is one way to help get that idea across a little bit.
Right. And that gets at the variability of samples, which is important.
What do you all think if we follow Bob's suggestion? I think this is your suggestion, Bob. If we go through these things like variability, distributional thinking, et cetera, and just iron out what it is you think students should know instead of just saying that this is a prerequisite. And I don't know, I feel that would help us in narrowing down our search for questions too, if we would have more of a concrete idea of what exactly it is we're going to look for in each of these areas.
I think that's a great idea.
Well, why don't we take a shot at it right now?
Right now, yep.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I think while we do that and design the questions, maybe it's a good idea to think about, kind of an easy question towards this understanding and a more difficult question,
mm-hmm.
kind of in a dichotomous sense of Bloom's taxonomy kind of thing, if you like that, you know, taxonomy.
I don't know much about it, but I hear a lot of it. I've heard it.
Yeah, but having something easier and something harder in any case is a good idea just for an instrument, right? Because you can make it at a different point on the scale.
Right.
Also, because when you only give tricky ones, like some of the artist ones, then you get back your students' results and you get really depressed.
Yeah. Well, I was amazed that I heard someone, I forget where it was, some talk at the joint math meetings, where someone really picked through people's questions and was understanding, what are you really testing? So there was some application of some math formula, I forget what it was, but basically you're not testing whether students have the ability to apply it, you're testing whether students have the ability to recognize when it should be applied. I don't know if that makes sense without the full context, but really, you know, as you look through what questions are asking, it's amazing that, you know, you're really testing students on something different than you intend. I found that a really enlightening piece.
I often have done item analyses on my questions where the notion is to then that the better students are more likely to do well on than poor students. But over a few years, what happens is if you're not careful, you get tricky questions, and you get questions that aren't measuring necessarily what students learn in the course, but what they bring in from the outside. You know. So I think it is important to take a look closely at what it is that we're trying to measure, and keep questions focused on that.
So you want to start with variability?
Yeah. Spread. Yeah. The notion of spread. The notion that you don't always, that the difference in variability is important to be able to compare distributions that are spread out, to separate mean from variance, that idea, I suppose. That it's not enough just to look at what an average score is, but it's really important to look at how precisely estimated that average is.
I guess I'm envisioning a comparison of distributions and trying to make sure students can understand by looking at a couple different histograms, you know, which one is more variable.
Right.
I don't know if that's getting too much to the questions already without defining what we're looking for. But
that's where my brain is, too. Yeah. And Bob, can I ask you a question about the pretest that you used on the sampling distribution activity?
Mm-hmm.
There was one question. I threw it in at the end.
Yeah. Which
where
one?
You had two histograms, and one was the option A is because it's bumpier.
Right.
Do you find a lot of students that think that is what variability is?
Yeah, there's a noticeable number of students who think that that's what variability is.
Early on,
after you've gone over what standard deviation is and such.
In the paper.
Sorry, I missed that point. Which question is that?
It's on page 10.
Yep.
Of the comments that I had thrown together.
Yes.
It's headed up with for the idea of variability, and it's number 2. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes. And so in your table 1 on page 300 of that chapter 13, sorry,
uh-huh.
all these different documents, when you wrote under the idea of variability that students need an understanding of the spread of a distribution in contrast to common misconceptions of smoothness or variety,
is
that what you were getting at?
Yep.
Okay.
So what's going on is two things that one thing I think that we all observed when we were generating this type of item was that there were noticeable numbers of students who thought if there's more possibilities, that the graph that represents more possible values, if a graph has bars above 1, 3, and 5, that doesn't have as many much variability as a graph that has bars above 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Okay.
So there's more possible scores that a person could get, 1, 2, 3, or 5, instead of just 1, 3, and 5. And so regardless of the heights of the bars or where the density was centered, that didn't matter. It's just how many possible options are there.
And that is correct in terms of one meaning of variability.
Right. That's
right.
Entirely wrong.
And then, but what I gave as an example, we'll both have the same range.
Mm-hmm.
And they might have different densities over in these different areas and so on. So, so that's one common everyday meaning that they bring to it. Another one that we would see is students actually talking about this one goes up and down more than this other graph. So it has more variability. And they're actually looking at either variability in heights, if you want to think of it that way, or actually up and downness. Mm-hmm. And when I created the items, I actually calculated the number of shifts as a prediction of which, if people who were thinking this way, which graph that they would say would have more variability. And so it's the number of times it switched from going down to up and vice versa.
Maybe we should talk about variance rather than variability. Because in some sense, you know, if they just bring a common everyday language to it, they're right. There is more variability in things bumping up and down all over the place.
Yeah, because we're thinking of it in terms of standard deviation, in the sense, and this variability is in the spread from the mean.
Right, but that's a very technical meaning that, you know, and presumably being in a stat course, that's what they ought to be doing. But, you know, strictly speaking, they're correct in one interpretation of this. If they say, well, A is bumpier, so it's more variable.
Well, I got a question. If you said something like, which of these distributions shows more variability in the distribution of scores?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
it has to be, and it's as part of the distribution. So the idea of distributional thinking and thinking about variability are pretty tightly entwined.
Yeah. And what I was going to, what I was just thinking right now is, I think it's a good question. It'll generate a lot of discussion. You should keep on it. But maybe step back from the question a moment is what I'm going to suggest. And whether you call it variability, variance, or how you want to orient students, again, what is it that you think they need to know about statistical variability or representing the variability in a distribution of a variable? What is it you think they need to know? And then work from that maybe to, so what does it look like when they know that? And also hold in mind, in service to understanding sampling distributions.
When I think about the relation to sampling distributions, I'm still where I was before. Michael, you might be there too with the histograms. And I'm just envisioning showing what happens to the variability in a sampling distribution using a histogram. And so I'm still where they should be able to look at two histograms and tell me which one has more variability.
And in fact, in most of the articles, Tisha, that you read and that I read, not maybe not most, but a large number of them, the tool that they used to do research on understanding about variability and understanding about distributions was very, very often comparing two different groups and the distributions of two groups. Because it gives them a context, some real data, and a way of thinking of it in terms of trying to really understand what's going on here, because you have to understand it to compare it with something else, and not just to describe one group in and of itself.
Yeah, there are two more questions like that on pages 2 and 3 of the handout, items 14 and 15. What is item 14 is getting at what we want. If you look at item 14, I found that one a bit tricky because it, I don't know if you have it in front of you, but item A is essentially bimodal distribution with the bumps at the ends, whereas distribution B has got the bump in the middle. And making a quick judgment about which has a greater standard deviation here is, I'd look at that pretty closely to make sure which one it was. And it seems like it's combining a couple of different concepts, you know, the notions of having things farther from the mean contributing more to standard deviations. But this definitely would be a harder question along the lines of what Michael was suggesting, an easier one and a harder one.
If I can go back just for a second to what Bob was saying and Tish as well, the idea of variability when you're talking about having it be part of comparing two histograms, I see that as just in general a very, very important use of the idea of variability. But variability, as far as being able to understand sampling distributions, if you're talking about, let's say, just one population, a sampling distribution of one mean, you're not really talking about variability in terms of comparing groups. You're looking at variability of one particular group and how it gets reduced when you take all possible samples of that particular group. So it's a different way of thinking about variability than using variability to describe differences. So I'm just trying to think in terms of understanding variability, period, and understanding variability in service to sampling distributions. And I think they're a little bit different. Does anybody understand what I'm saying?
I see your point, yeah. Yeah, like how does that item 14 and sampling distributions?
Well, for them to understand sampling distributions, do you think they have to have a mean-centered conception of variability? Do you think they need to understand kind of density of deviation from the mean in order to have okay. So
I'm just trying to think of the skill involved when I think about variability of a sampling distribution. I'm basing that on the variability, kind of looking at the variability of the original, let's say, population from which all these possible samples are drawn, and that when I look at means of all these possible samples, that variability is going to be reduced for the distribution of the sampling, for the sampling distribution, the standard error. But I find that more difficult than talking about variability in terms of, okay, look at these two groups and compare which one has more variability.
And
so I think the question, some could be variability in terms of comparing groups, but understanding variability of just one single group is also important because that's kind of what you're looking at when you're getting to a sampling distribution.
Okay. I'm just going to interject, too, that so that type of item, that number 14 and the one that follows after it, number 15, I developed about 15 items along those lines.
What page are we on here of the
this is page
of the 14 and 15?
Yeah, so they're the 14 and 15 of the original questions thrown together on variability.
Okay, gotcha.
Does that make sense? And here's what I'm going to throw out at you is that, to me personally, and I think as Joan, Beth, and I were devising these items, we weren't interested so much in could they make a correct decision every single time. We are more interested in what do their answers across the set reveal or imply about their conception of variability? What are they attending to? What are they looking at? And is it in line with what we want them to be understanding? So it was diagnostic more in its intent. And last thing in my mind right now, so like with number 14, personally, Given what I think is important to understand about variability, I really don't care whether they got the right answer or not, whether they chose the right option or not. I'd be more interested in talking to them and finding out how they're reasoning about it. I think that's along the lines of something Dale was saying. And I'd like to know, do they have a really complex understanding such they would actually, if a student came up with saying, you know what, I don't think I can really tell without calculating, and told me why, I think that student might be have a pretty nice, deep understanding of variability in a distribution. Because just looking at it, I'd say it's really hard to tell.
So the multiple choice then wouldn't reveal that kind of...
Not that item by itself, I don't think. But by itself, if you kind of, you know, Tisha's common comment to all the items is we should ask them to explain. We should have them give a justification or whatever. And I really resonate with that.
Yeah. But that's what you did when you generated these items, right? When you generated the multiple choice options, had people explain reasoning? I think you mentioned that in one of the other ones.
Yeah, I don't know if for this particular set we did. I think for this we thought more about what do we know students do and how might we represent that whole range across the items so that when we got the responses to, like, say, 6, 8 of them, you know, if we chose them wisely, we might be able to tell something from that. And that was more from the perspective also of gathering data from large numbers of students. But I could also see using just one or two of them in a more diagnostic way and having students verbalize, write it down, or speak about their thinking and try to use that in a diagnostic way.
Now, if we could go backwards, say, from looking at we want them to understand sampling distributions. And when we look at these two questions, what is the part of variability that comes out of these two that leads them to a better understanding of sampling distributions? Does that make sense?
Can you say that once more for me, Michelle?
I'm trying to think of when I look, if we look at the questions that we want to, that we end up wanting to select as questions that measure whether or not they have the prerequisite understanding for understanding sampling distributions.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at a question like this, like say for example number 14, if we were to give a question like this and then try to decide, okay, this person does or doesn't have an understanding of spreads or standard deviations sufficient enough to understand sampling distributions. Where is the close link here, I guess, is what I'm asking. From a question like this to what part of sampling distribution would this help them understand or impede them from understanding?
Yeah, I see this go ahead, Michael.
I mean, so for question 14, I think that it would help them understand, I guess not necessarily just sampling distribution, but if we think about a central limit theorem, the idea of convergence to a normal distribution no matter what the underlying distribution is.
I think question 14 is a good measure of how is standard deviation calculated, which is, I think, getting to Michelle's point, that may or may not be that critical for understanding how the central limit theorem works.
I'm going to ask you guys to look at number 15 for a moment, the one at the top of the next page. Are you guys there?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to throw this out at you. I know that I think the majority of students would not choose C, but I know that there's students who choose C. What wouldn't you be curious as to why a student would choose C?
It could be for the reason you mentioned earlier, is just in terms of the variability of the heights of these things. They look almost the same.
They're almost the same. There's
and,
also six
and the
bars.
Number of bars, yeah.
It's the same. So now, if that was a student's understanding, if that was part of their understanding, and now you're going to take them into the central limit theorem, as Michael brought up, and you want them to understand as sample size increases, variability decreases, this might have some implications for those particular students' ability to grasp that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They don't see graph A as having less variability than graph B, and you show them a sampling distribution based on sample size 50 and one based on sample size 10, one's going to be narrower than the other, and they may not see that as representing less variability.
Right. It may just depend on how many bins you choose to show when you plot it.
Do you get many people who answer C to that one? Just out of curiosity.
I don't know. I don't know off the bat. But I know when I was doing my interview research, these 12 people, I had one student who definitely was in that camp.
Okay.
And then on another question, what you get is, this is a common thing in people's development of understanding in a certain area. Novices tend to reason from the specifics of every situation you give them, and they don't have the general integrated concept. And so you show them this situation, and they pick up on the number of bars are the same, for example, or the heights are all the same. You give them another situation, and they'll look at some other feature because that's what helps them distinguish or say that the two are the same. And so it's also a cognitive thing. It might be indicating where the person is in their understanding, integration of all the information. But, yeah, you'll get some people who will do it, who will answer C. And I don't know what the implications are for their thinking about sampling distributions when you get to it, but I was just trying to bring that up as an example of what a particular type of item might give you about a student's understanding. And how it might how it would relate, like, specifically to the central limit theorem.
Thank you.
That is, to me, when I think of idea of variability as a prerequisite for sampling distributions, that's it, is when I put up a sampling distribution for a sample size 10 and another one for a sample size 100, I want them to be able to predict what a sample of size 200 would give me, the shape of that sampling distribution, and have them sketch it out. And I don't know how much else I really think of about variability being related to them understanding sampling distributions.
Yeah, in some sense, that variability shows up in the sampling distributions is relatively easy to deal with because have the same mean and they're the same shapes, and it has only to do with how spread out they are. So you don't have these kinds of problems that these questions are dealing with. But yet they're very important for understanding what standard deviation is.
And getting back to something we talked about a little bit earlier, one of the things that the idea of variability is for sampling distributions is the variation from sample to sample that which of course if we calculate the mean, it's the variability of the means we're talking about here, but just in general, that when you go from sample to sample, your means will be different, even your sample standard deviations will be different from each other. So maybe from variability and from that point of view can be important as well for sampling distributions.
Right. Would that be something that was sampling, or would that,
I think that falls under sampling.
The notion that every sample can give you a different result, even if you're doing things perfectly properly, you don't always get the same answer. If we want to separate, variability is per se, and then the notion of that you have variability in different samples. Variability is, do we want to go right to how you measure it? These questions are focusing on how one measures variability, I think.
What about one of the, besides just histograms, what do you think of some of the questions on using box plots to compare variability? Like if we look up at what number is it, number 2.
And I think the more ways we assess it, the better, because in histograms, we said people might be looking at the variability of heights of the bars, whereas in box plot, that problem would be washed away, although I'm sure we'd be introducing one or two new ones.
No, exactly.
Like the very first question on page 1, where there are the two box plots that have very similar means and range very similar, but the whole difference is in the variability of the scores. Then there's another way to get it. Yeah, I think that's for getting understanding of what variability is and its importance in characterizing a distribution. That kind of thing can be useful.
I recall, I'm not sure, I don't think I've put it in here. I don't know whether it's on the chaos test or it might be on the specific scale test for spread. I think, Bob, that you have questions somewhere where you ask which box plots are most likely to be the box plot of given histograms. Is that in your work? Does that ring a bell to you?
It's something that Alan Rossman and Beth Chance do a lot of, and they and I think we've got examples of that in the item database and probably in the tests also, the artist test and the chaos test. There's a variety of types of questions asked around that line. There's also questions where there's four box plots and four sets of summary statistics, and the question, and it's a matching question, which set of statistics goes with which box plot or vice versa.
On page 9, there's item 19 and 20 that are that type where there's a population distribution and looking at the different possible sampling distributions. I thought those were very good items, very clever items.
Oh, I see, the ones with the sampling distributions. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we think we're clever. We have high opinions of ourselves. And that's, you know, that's one of the things that's trying to get at is can the student distinguish between a sample of observations and a distribution of a statistic, and you know, do they choose A both times or choose the same graph for both questions 19 and 20? I've certainly seen that happen. And that's similar to another one that the last one that Tish chose, which is on page 13 of what I've got for the printout.
Yeah, that was from your pretest as well.
Yeah. So that kind of items 19 and 20 in that last one there, that item 1 from the pretest. You might think about how those three together might get at something of importance in their understanding. That's getting at distribution more. So I think we jumped topics there a little bit.
I just looked at the time. It's unbelievable.
How
fast it went by today.
Wow. That's usually a good thing, though. That means we're being productive.
Yeah. Hate to end good conversations, too. Not
but
that
just,
none of our others weren't good.
One note. I mean, Tish made comments on a number of these that we should be asking people to explain reasons why, and I think that really is important for understanding what's going on. And then we do it for practical purposes. We talked earlier about moving on to try to develop multiple choice kind of questions, which would be quite a bit easier to build a scale on. Scoring people's discussions or explanations is pretty difficult and time consuming. And informative.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interject, but when I was reading through all these things yesterday, I had our conversation from the last call in my mind. Hello?
I'm still here.
Does that mean time's up?
I think that's a warning.
I bet that's our time alarm, huh?
Or the British are invading, I don't know.
Mamma mia.
Scares me. I'm sorry. I don't even remember what I was saying.
We need to pick a time for our next call, in any case.
Oh, yeah. Can I finish my thought, do you think? Or?
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, last time we had mentioned something about wanting 10 questions for each of these domains, and I'm thinking we should shrink way back just look at a few, and especially with some preliminary work, just get into the students' thinking. I don't know how you feel about it, but I think two or three questions on each area is plenty to start with.
That's more practical, and for sure. And especially if we're going to be asked to explain reasoning.
And through these, my opinion is that through the students' explanations, maybe we'll be able to think of other questions and maybe build up to a bigger list at some point.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
And I think that it would be good if we can start getting, collecting some data and being able to talk about some actual student responses.
So do we want to continue this conversation through the Google site in a way? Maybe each of us put together our ideas on what exactly it is we're looking to measure on the other domains, I guess, the distributional thinking, the idea of sampling, and then sampling distributions, and maybe each pick a few of our favorite questions and then kind of, I don't know. I don't want to wait until the next time we talk to have this conversation, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Oh, and one more thing, I'm sorry, while we're all together. Did we ever discuss the normal distribution? And because since that's given as a prerequisite in their article, was there a reason that we overlooked it? Or did we throw it in maybe with something else?
We can keep it under distributions. I think it's really important as a part of understanding the central limit theorem.
Okay.
One has to understand normal distribution.
Yeah, we never focused directly on that.
No.
We talked about variability, distribution, sampling. Was it just those, mainly those three?
Right, and then sampling distributions.
And then sampling distributions, and the link of those three to sampling distributions.
We could include it under distributions as, you know, when we talk about shapes of distributions, where the normal would be one of the shapes.
So maybe that's something when we're putting together these, a list of what we want from each category and some questions, maybe we should have some on the normal distribution too, and also what we think students should know about the normal distribution before they can move on to sampling distributions. Is that all right? Just to maybe add that to things that we should be looking for.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little leery of that. I'm not convinced that, I mean, if you were to ask me, is understanding the normal distribution a prerequisite for sampling distributions, I would say not really.
Okay.
I mean, it's an obvious next step before you move into hypothesis testing.
Is it something?
Well, but if the third principle of sampling distributions is that it approaches normal, and unless we know what that means.
Well, sampling distributions of the mean do.
Pardon?
Sampling distributions of a sample
right.
mean approach normal, and sampling distributions of p-values
maybe something else
tend to,
right.
but sampling distributions of f-statistics don't.
But the most common application is we're talking about distributions.
Yeah, I think that's a good clarification, but one that you know, I think I'm happy to say, you know, we are when we talk about sampling distributions, we're talking about sampling distribution of the sample mean.
Yeah. I'm just going to interject. You know, Joan and I and Andy. I don't want to speak for Beth and Alan, but I think they too. So I guess I just to speak for them. We've been changing our thinking about that fourth thing, that normal distribution. I think we're leaning more on the distributional thinking is what's important, and how that, and area, and understanding area under the curve, and how that supports the concept of p-value. But that's important. But the knowing the characteristics of a normal distribution per se, not as important for understanding sampling distributions.
Yeah, I guess I'd buy that, too. It's just in terms of when we talk about approaching a normal distribution,
mm-hmm.
that's got to have some meaning.
But I think students see what happens when you create sampling distributions, and they see that bell-shaped curve, and they tend to say that's a normal distribution.
Yeah.
So would you keep it under the idea of distribution?
Yeah, I think so. And maybe the point is that one doesn't need to go into the formulas for the normal distribution, you know, the calculus or whatever behind it, but still the concept of what is a normal distribution, and maybe seeing it as just displayed as through simulations or whatever to show that it's how it evolves and show an ideal example of it and so forth gives all that one needs to have. But there is some beautiful mathematics there.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to set up a meeting time while we're all together still?
Yeah.
So sometime early February?
That works for me.
Okay.
I'm sorry, what? Say it again?
Early February.
Okay.
And Tisha, you need we need to get something to Bob in another week or so, is that right?
Right.
And I've been starting to compile the section on the literature review for variability from the ones I've read. Basically, it's the special edition on variability. So I'll get that to you early next week. I'm looking here. Let's see, February. What about the first week in February?
The 4th through the
8th? Yeah, 4th through 7th, let's say.
Okay.
Is everybody around in that week?
Yeah, the 7th might be a little hard for me if we want to do Thursday again.
Okay.
I don't know how long it's going to run.
Is it Tuesday better?
Yeah, I can do Tuesday the 5th.
Yeah. How about Shandale?
Yes, Works. I'm looking at my schedule to see. Yeah, I'm open all afternoon.
And same time?
About same time, yeah.
Okay.
3 Central, 4 Eastern.
And just to say, I'll be
Bob, does that work too?
I'll be teaching class, then my class goes till 3:45 Central, so 4:45 Eastern.
We could start an hour later.
Does that work for you, Michelle?
Yeah, I can do that.
It does work for me.
Can we do that?
I just don't know how much
fine.
It affects you, Michelle.
No, I don't mind. I don't mind.
Okay.
I'm a night person.
3 a.m. for you then?
No.
What time is that for you, Michelle?
Yeah.
That would be starting at 11 and ending at midnight, but I can do that. I rarely go to bed before midnight, so that's fine.
Okay. Now?
So Tuesday, February 5th at 5 p.m. Eastern.
Right.
Okay.
11 p.m. Monaco, so 4 p.m. Central. And what are our roles next time? Does somebody have that in front of them to rotate?
Let's see.
What happened notes here?
I can find it in a second.
I think next time, if everybody moves up one, I believe, which would make me the recorder and Dale, the synthesizer, Tisha, the moderator, and
Tisha,
the organizer, right. And Michael, the moderator. See, yeah, I am not real fresh at 11 p.m.
Okay.
Okay. So, as far as the documents that we have up, if we were to pick out a few questions. Do we want to do it as a group? Do we want to pick out some of the ones based on Dale and Tisha's questions here, comments? Should we pick out, say, 3 or 4 on variability and 3 or 4 on sampling distributions and put them in a separate document? What do you think?
I was wondering if, based on what Tisha was kind of saying towards the end, if you guys would maybe want to first take a stab at putting together what you think students should understand of each of these topics, and maybe having a document where you do that, and you can each go back and make comments and edit it, and then when you feel like you've got that fairly good consensus, excuse my dog here, when you feel like you've got fairly good consensus, that then use that to guide picking items.
Items, yeah. Good idea.
Yes. Oh, I like that.
Okay. So we probably should start with some, maybe just that list that we had started with. But does somebody want to throw out a draft first? Might be a good way to go.
Okay.
Or we each...
Just each try it, get there first, and start modifying.
Okay.
I'm hoping to have free time on Friday afternoons this whole semester that I can devote to this. So maybe by the end of next week I'll have something posted.
Okay. I will make an effort as well, a bigger effort than I made over the holidays. Okay.
My guess is that deep... here was when the recorder quit recording, I'll bet. I'm not sure about that. So,
okay.
Michael, you may have to be relying on memory for for recording.
Okay.
That was a good conversation, everybody. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And we'll talk to you in just under a month then.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right.
Okay. All right, signing off. Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Take care, everybody.
Thanks, Bob.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.